Hi, this is Marian Samuel from the Caribbean Radio Lighthouse in Antigua. Every Wednesday at 12:30 p.m., we interview a guest about real-life issues from the Caribbean. Welcome to Lighthouse Conversations, a time to explore the issues surrounding your everyday existence. Your family, your community, your environment, your health and safety habits, your lifestyle, both physically and spiritually, will all be discussed here on Lighthouse Conversations. Let's get started and see just what we can learn to better your life. Welcome to part two of this Lighthouse Conversation with Mrs. Kelsick, an educator by profession. She is the deputy principal of the Princess Margaret Secondary School and the general secretary of the Teachers Union. And we are discussing the influential factors of our students' overall well-being and academic success. Let's join in on the conversation as Mrs. Kelsick continues to answer the question as to the contributing factor for the rebellion or the behavior of our students.
Right. There's something spiritual that is driving that behavior. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then you go, what is happening now too is you find a lot more of our students, as young as they are avid smokers. So I don't know, a lot of us, when we heard the marijuana was decriminalized, mm-hmm. I don't know if we took that to be that it is
it's okay legal,
but I don't know, that just opened a floodgate and everybody wants to be a smoker now. Mm. Everybody wants to smoke marijuana. And I'm like, as an adult, and that's what you want to do, that's your decision to make. God give us free will, that's your decision. But I feel like when you start messing with our children like at such a young age, before their brain is fully developed, before they really know themselves, it's going to create rippling effects. And that is exactly what we are seeing. Mm-hmm. Our children don't know how to deal with conflict appropriately. Mm-hmm. They don't know how to think properly. And as soon as there's an issue, it's aggression. There's a spirit that is driving, how are you just so angry?
Yeah.
There's a spirit that drives all of that. And if we're not honest with ourselves, we're just going to keep going in circles, and these things are going to happen. Mm-hmm.
Yes, it's especially the decriminalizing of the marijuana. I think saying it and not putting things in place to combat the consequences, it's irresponsible.
Students come into school, and as soon as they come to school, they smell like marijuana. Like, it just get me high. I feel like I'm the one that's smelling marijuana. We are disadvantaging our children. There's a greater number of them that are doing positive things.
And I like that.
But that small percentage, they're doing so much.
Mm-hmm.
The little small percentage, they're doing so much. And I think that we're still failing them, because we can't just leave them. They're going to become the criminals of tomorrow, who are going to just make my life hell. So when I make my little money from teaching, then you're going to want to come and take my little pittance that I just make from teaching. We're failing our children, and eventually we're going to see that we've failed our societies if we don't nip this thing in the bud right now and address the issues on the ground.
This generation right now, they're who we are going to depend on later on in the next 20, 30 years from now. So what are they going to do? Mentally, they are broken. So who is going to run society?
Our children now, we have cuddled them too much too. We cuddle our children. So they're so soft. Like, mentally, the things that I hear some people complaining about. And I'm not saying that we are to make life hard for them, but I don't think we have taught our children how to be resilient. So every little thing, like, it's like they're having a mental breakdown. Mm-hmm. And so they try to find other avenues to release, and that's where the smoking and the bad behavior comes from. Parenting is hard. I'm not going to say it's easy. It is hard. Mm-hmm. I have three children. I pray to God all the time to give me the strength to deal with the three of them, because I can't do it on my own. And I have three, and I'm married, so I have my husband to help me, and I have good support system. Their grandparents, their aunties are in their lives, and I still find it hard. So I can only imagine what it's like for a single parent who has nobody. But as a community, we have failed our children. And as a system, as a school system, as a social system, we are continuing to fail them. Because if you're going to say to them that their no real responsibility is when you have or when you do or certain things, then they're just going to continue to do those things. And so we have to find that balance. We have to get back to the place where community is important. It becomes important again. We have that assistance from persons within our families and our wider communities to help us raise our children, because no one person can raise a child on their own.
What are some serious issues principals and teachers may face when they try to correct or discipline a child?
You may have a parent that is not cooperative, mm-hmm. whose thinking may be different from yours, and so that presents issues at times. The system itself may tie your hands, so there's so much that you can do or that you can't do. But in terms of trying to deal with disciplinary issues, there are things in place for us to deal with them. And for the most part, you are able to deal with those. The ministry outlines what we can do and what we can do mm-hmm. based on the level of the action. So if it's a fight, for example, and their weapons, mm-hmm. we know that automatically goes to the Ministry of Education for consideration.
Okay.
If it's an internal fight, then you bring the parties together. You try to, as a principal, my principal would try to figure out what the core issue is, and you bring the parents in. Most parents are cooperative. You always have that one or two that may give you a little trouble, but mm-hmm. for the most part, we don't.
What are some things you do to keep yourself motivated as a teacher?
I pray plenty.
That's good. That's good.
I call on Jesus plenty during the day. I love what I do. Mm-hmm. I love what I do. I love education. I love working with children. And I think every year there's a core set of students who you work with, and they make you believe in teaching. Mm. They make you believe in what you're doing. And so even if there are some bad moments, there are so many good ones that they kind of tend to outweigh the bad moments. So there are things about, our system that I wish would change. There are things, even with our students and our parent-teacher relationship, that I think I would like to see more of our parents involved in the process. There are always things that you want to change, but the bright sparks, there are a lot of good moments, and the good moments make up for the few bad moments that you might experience.
Okay. Again, being in the system for quite a while, do teachers have the support of the education system, like their superiors, to carry out their wishes, to see the success of their students? Is that...
That's a very tricky question. That's okay.
Okay.
I am very honest with everything. I try to be as honest as I can be. And honestly, I have a lot of issues with our system. I think, and maybe I can put on my general secretary hat for the teachers union at this point, there's more. There's a lot more that we can do. Mm-hmm. I think, it's always interesting for me when I hear them say, oh, education gets the largest part of the budget. But realistically, we know most of that money goes to paying personnel within the education system. So it takes a lot more investment in education. And we're not serious yet about education in terms of how much we want to invest in education. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking both from the ministry end and even sometimes as parents, our priorities are not always where they need to be. Because mm-hmm. the kind of investment you have to make in education to ensure that your child gets a quality education, it's a lot. Mm-hmm. And so I think that the Ministry of Education tries, but I also think that we have to be realistic and know that we have not done the best that we could by our teachers. When teachers have to be waiting 5, 6, 7 years to be upgraded after you get a degree, that is crazy. Mm-hmm. And you go to a classroom, you're being told to differentiate, but you don't have the resources to differentiate. Mm-hmm. It's a lot. And I'm telling you, persons who stay within teaching, you have to stay because you love it. They are going to be bad eggs, no matter what profession you're going to. But again, as the Ministry of Education, you have to manage mm-hmm. the personnel that you have. And so if you realize that there are teachers who are not performing, then you have to find ways to encourage them and to motivate them to perform. And so they have done, I guess, what they could with what they have. But there's a lot more that has to be done for us to get to the place where we can see we have a system that is working like a well-oiled machine.
Mm. There are many ways to learning. What are some major challenges teachers face as they develop learning methods in this challenging world for students? And it doesn't matter the age, whether they're 3 to 20 years, because I know there's preschool, you know, but challenges that teachers may face as they try to develop certain learning methods.
I think the major issue is resources. It's a major issue is having the resources that you need available to you. Yeah, because if you have, and not only that, you have, in our public systems, from the primary school coming up, you have very large classes.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you have large classes, you're not able to provide, you're not able to use resources effectively, or you don't have resources to even think about using them effectively, then how can you differentiate? Because if I have 24 students, 25 students at a primary school level, children troublesome. I don't want to talk to... I have 3 at home and I was so happy. I mean, I wasn't happy to go back to school after the summer as a teacher, but as a parent, I was... The day school opened, everybody go back to school. Let me tell you. To the point where my second son is in preschool.
Mm-hmm.
My first son is in primary school. Preschool usually opens like a day after. His preschool usually opens a day after his brother's school.
Mm-hmm.
So I was so excited to get the both of them out of my house. I got the both of them ready to go to school the 4th of September. And it is only when I went by his grandmother. But she's saying, but wait, how come Kai going to school this morning? It's not tomorrow. And that's the only time I remembered. But yes, it's true, it's tomorrow. The child has to go to school. So you can imagine 24 little people in a classroom. You have to differentiate. It is, and the physical structures are not very accommodating because they are hot. Because right now that is the place is hot now, so they are hot. The space is just it's not a space that encourages learning, and so for the space to encourage learning, a lot of teachers have to spend a lot of their own money to buy manipulatives to put in the classroom, to buy charts and all those things to put in the classroom, and so you're trying to do that, you're trying to use your own money to do all of that, you're trying to get internet that don't work all the time. Listen, it's a real struggle. Sometimes when you think about it, you get depressed, but you just do what you can. You do your best with what you have, because it's not easy, and our resources, we're very, very limited with resources, but we keep doing the best we can with what we have.
Okay. The voice you are hearing is that of Mrs. Kelsick, an educator by profession. She is the deputy principal of the Princess Margaret Secondary School and the general secretary of the teachers' union. What are some specifics that affect the learning environment of students in schools, colleges, universities?
The physical learning environment, as I said, our spaces are not very welcoming spaces. So one of the toughest things we are facing now is that a lot of our public schools were built many, many years ago. And the persons who built these schools, they didn't have foresight that we would be where we are today. So in terms of incorporating resources such as maybe a smart board, having outlets in appropriate areas or enough outlets so that students can have their laptops, classrooms are just a box, some with very limited windows, and it's hot, so there's not a lot of breeze blowing through. And so it makes it very hard for me to concentrate. If I'm hot, I'm miserable, there's nothing there to really catch my attention. It's just a teacher standing in front of the classroom teaching me. It's not very accommodating. And so when we think about the physical thing, a lot of our schools are very archaic in how they were built, and we have to reimagine. And it's amazing how there's so many things that fall into or fit into what affects the education system. Because who would have thought that civil engineering and the way we build our schools would affect how we learn? But it does. Because if I'm not comfortable, then I'm not going to try to self-actualize. I'm not trying to self-actualize if I'm hot and I'm uncomfortable. I'm just trying to find a way to feel more comfortable before I can think about learning anything. And so we have to reimagine how we build schools and how we go about outfitting those schools with the with proper resources to encourage and motivate our students and our teachers.
Because every time I look at the schools, and I'm thinking about our students as well, and just the whole thing that's going on, sometimes I think, I wonder if the environment, if they're in a different space, if they're in a different, you know, along with other things, can help.
Well, I can tell, let me tell you, when I was at the private school, they had air-conditioned classrooms. That was a little bit more comfortable. No, I'm not saying that the government needs to do that, but maybe they do. Because sometimes I feel like we accept mediocrity, and we need to get to the point where, and it bothers me so much, because I'm like, we're doing our children a disservice, and we just keep saying, oh, the government don't have it. But if you can find... Yes. You know, you can, you have to be able to, when you go into government and when you take up these kind of roles, it's because we don't think that Antigua has all the money, but we think that you have the potential to engage investors, to find ways to solve the problem. I'm not asking you to get all the money from just taxes. That is impossible.
Of course.
But you have to be able to network. You have to be able to engage persons from different parts of the world. You have to be able to write a grant and ask them to come and put some ACs in the school. So a lot of times the schools on their own, especially the public schools on their own, try their best to see how they can make the environment a better environment. So, for example, at my school, I know my principal is very much into trying to do a beautification project at our school to plant flowers just to give the place a little, zhuzh up the place, make it look nice.
Sometimes your surrounding causes you to act and behave a kind of way.
It does.
It does. What is the biggest problem that a teacher faces when interacting with students?
One of the biggest issues you might face with students might be misunderstanding, a lack of communication, possibly, and children who are rude. I don't even think it's children who have academic, you know, learning issues, stuff like that, because I think once a child is willing to work, the teacher will go the extra mile. It's the rude children, the children who are not very respectful to the teacher and to their peers, and who don't know how to communicate openly. And so it's important for us to teach our children how to speak to persons, how to interact with people. And our teachers, too, have to learn. So it's an interpersonal skills. If you don't have good interpersonal skills, then you're going to struggle. And if the children come and they don't have good interpersonal skills, then it just makes for chaos. Because I think outside of that, whatever academic issues a child may have, the teacher will find a way to work with the child once the child is willing. I used to teach Spanish, and I just get depressed sometimes because I'm like, people just don't like my subject. People just don't like my subject. But I would work, no matter how much you are, how slow you are, I will work with you. I will try and teach you the vocabulary. We will stay back after school and do what we have to do, because I prefer a child who is slow but interested than a child who is smart and knows the work but arrogant with it. I think interpersonal, that you know, interpersonal skills between the relationship between the teacher and the students, and being able to balance it, that may be one of the most difficult things a teacher has to face. Because you're talking about, if it's a class of 30, you're talking about 30 different personalities that you have to try to, I can't speak to child A. I can't approach them and speak to them the same way. So I might be able to rough up child B, because child B not going to take it no way. But child A might be a little bit more sensitive. So I have to, you know, use my principal call it, the four fingers, and just tap them on the back. And tell them, okay, let's go now. So it's that relationship and balance, finding balance.
What are some ways parents can work together with teachers and the institution to see the success of their child's education?
Let us know if there are any issues. If you noticed any issues coming from primary school, well, I'm speaking for secondary. If you're coming from the primary school and you notice any issues, let us know. And even if you're at the primary and you're noticing, okay, so I noticed that he's not reading, you know, as well as he should, what do you think we can do? So we come together and we can create a plan, a learning plan for the child. So I think communicating what your expectations are as a parent is important. and having an open conversation with teachers, with the administration of the school, that's important as well. Because sometimes we think, we might sit at home with our expectations and we think, oh, but how did I know if I do that? You understand? But you just have to let us know that this is what it is. This is what I expect, or at least how can you help me to help my child. Outside of that, if you have, we always tell our parents, if you can offer support, whether it be to your child or to somebody else's child, we welcome that support, because not everybody has the kind of parent that you would want them to have. So let's say you want to offer support to the school, whether it be through financial aid or whatever the case is, because when we think about academic success, it's not just about what they do in the exercise book. As you say, there are a lot of factors that affect our students. If the environment is not suitable, they're going to be affected. If I don't eat breakfast, I'm going to be affected. So let's say if you want to come and bring and say, okay, let me put together a feeding program. Let me contribute to a feeding program. It may not be your child, but somebody else's child would benefit. So as I said, that community spirit, I think we need to get back to that. Yeah. That community spirit is very important, and it's, you might be surprised how helping somebody else's child helps your child, because you might think, oh, it's my child and my child alone. But there are times when your child may have to work in a group. There are times when your child may not know something, and it might be somebody else who has to, you know, another student who has to help them. Or simply, your child might be in a class where another child is misbehaving because he didn't eat this morning and he's cranky. And the teacher now have to spend more time ensuring that that child is okay. And your child is just there like, every time I go class, this boy always disruptive and something. Nice. So we have to get back to that community spirit of taking care of each other. And I think as parents, if we're able to help our schools to take care of our child and to take care of somebody, even if one other child, then it makes a big difference.
Good idea. What's your most rewarding takeaway from just being a teacher?
Seeing my students find their version of success, not just at the end of the 5 years, but even 5 years after they've left. I think I've always believed that every child's version of success is going to be different. So success for one child may be, at least I finished secondary school and I have 2 CXC subjects. Success for another child might be I have 10 subjects with 10 distinctions. But when I can see that they have used what we've given them at Princess Margaret, the tools and the life skills that we've given them to find success and to contribute positively to their society, that for me is everything. So when I see them become chefs, because, you know, it's plenty of them past 3 p.m., they're welders and they're chefs. Some of them are making plenty more money than
yes,
and they work in
true.
The bank. And sometimes when you go to the bank, they'll tell you to come. They're going to take care of you. And they work in the different departments in government. When you can see a child, or by then they're adults, when you can see them thrive in that way. I mean, I have students who are now doctors. I remember going to the hospital with my son. And, you know, that's when I had my first, and as a first-time parent, you're kind of frightened. And it was one of my students who took care of us. So it's like being able to see them thrive in their own field. Everybody's not going to be a doctor and a lawyer and all of that. But watching them use whatever we have given them at that level and turn it into something completely amazing, that is, for me, is everything.
Listeners, trust those powerful factors that was made to you was indeed impactful. And we do want to thank Mrs. Kelsick for coming and sharing. Whether a parent or a teacher or even a student, she gave us information that we can thrive upon and prepare our children for a world of so much uncertainty and hope for them that they can actually make that difference. So thank you, Ms. Kelsick.
You're welcome.
Thanks for listening in on our conversation. We trust that it was beneficial to you as you continue to develop a more meaningful life. Do you have a topic or a guest you would like us to have a conversation with for a future episode on Lighthouse Conversations? We would love to hear your suggestions. Send us a mail at Caribbean Radio Lighthouse P.O. Box 1057, St. John's, Antigua, or Lighthouse, B-I-M-I, at gmail.com, or give us a call at area code 268-462-1454, or send us a message via WhatsApp or text at area code 268-782-1454. Thanks for listening. Remember, you can hear Lighthouse Conversations Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. on the Caribbean Radio Lighthouse. If you're in Antigua, you can listen at 92.3 MHz FM. If you're in the Caribbean, you can listen at 1160 kHz AM or listen online at www.radiolighthouse.org from anywhere in the world. Or you can subscribe to this podcast. Looking forward to having you join us next time. Bye-bye.